hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America. No, no, no.
Okay, we're back with another emergency Star Wars podcast. The thing we do every time World War III starts. Hey, Anders.
Hello, Anders J. Lee here.
Jake J. Flores here.
is your middle name actually have a J?
Not at all.
You could go by JJ then.
Well, I couldn't because it's not real, but I guess I could. Because there's no law saying I can't lie about my initials.
Yeah, if it was a J, you could go by JJ. I would go by AJ, but that was unfortunately the name of a bully of mine. And so, well, psychologically,
you are not an AJ. AJ is a douche.
They all are. Yeah, it's funny how that works.
I hate AJs.
Best one was AJ Soprano, and even he kind of sucked.
Yeah. JJ, well, that would be cool because then I could be like, I'm Jar Jar Binks, which is the topic of that's short for Jar Jar. My name is short for Jar Jar Binks Flores, which is the topic of our podcast today, obviously, since that's the only thing happening in the news.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it.
People don't remember, by the way, 4 years ago, last when the U.S. attacked Iran. I don't think I was on this one. You guys did. You had just watched the new Star Wars flick, which I don't remember at the time which one that was. Not Solo, but Leia or something. And
not even close, man. I love it when you don't know a pop culture thing. It was Brano is what it was called.
Brano, right. Also in the Star Wars universe somehow.
Sure, yeah.
Dragon Ball Z is actually extended Star Wars. It's part of the – it's a different nether region of the Lucasverse.
But why the hell not?
But you guys did a joke because we killed Soleimani, Trump did. And so you did a joke, emergency Iran podcast, and everybody listened thinking that we were got the hard-hitting hot poop. But it turned out to be about Star Wars, and people were mad.
Yeah, well, all right. We'll just give away the game for him, sure. I guess that is important if we have listeners that have started listening since the fucking the final Star Wars movie came out. We might. I don't know who the hell, whether there's new spillover or what's going on.
People get brain damage. People forget things.
That's true. Braino damage. So what happened is we just didn't have time to compile an episode on something that vast in the 24 hours while it was happening. Cause we had already planned to go watch a stupid movie and do a, we went to the movies podcast with Bryn and Jeremy from Gen Loss, or I don't know who the hell else was there. My friend Blake, he was terrible. I remember he kept talking during the movie and I didn't know what happened, but it sucked. It was a bad movie. People got really mad at us because they expect things from this podcast for reasons I can't comprehend. And people were like, you didn't actually do an episode on Iran. So then we did one later. But then it's become our tradition to do this dumb callback to this joke every time World War III starts, which is which has been kind of an annual thing for the last 4 years or so.
Yeah, and each time it's like it seems really scary at first, and then and watch me jinx myself, and then it just nothing really changes, and it kind of seems like maybe that's what's happening here, but not good.
I don't want to have egg on my face next week or whatever, but this feels like of all of the things that could pop off a World War III, this kind of feels like the one, or one at least the most credible one yet. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so for people who don't know, Iran sent drones right to Israel, and they did a little drone bombing, but what has not been discussed in the mainstream media is that Israel bombed a consulate, an Iranian consulate in Damascus on April 1st. And maybe they tried to do the April Fool's Day defense, but that's a provocation. And as we'll get into on the show, Israel has a system of plausible deniability. We're like, we didn't mean to do it.
This is going to be in the history books like the Tet Offensive, but it's going to be like the April Fool's Day assault.
Yeah. Yeah, but now Iran is retaliating. It appears just with drones, right? But it could escalate. It's true.
Yeah, and this is being spun in an interesting way. You know, a lot of the language is like Iran decides to finally attack in a sanctioned state manner to make it seem like this is like this huge escalation on Iran's part. But that it is true that Iran has never formally attacked fucking Israel. And Israel has been formally attacking Palestine, another state,
not a state yet.
Well, a place. I mean,
a place, yeah.
I'm just trying to kind of parse out the inconsistencies here that you're going to see in the media framing, right? Because, like, it actually should speak volumes about this maybe Iran specifically, has never actually acted out in the open like this, although there's been, you know, proxy stuff and all this, you know, you could argue about Iran funding Hamas and Houthis and stuff like that. But, I would invoke all of the stupid language they use to defend Israel, right? Like, Iran has a right to defend itself. Mm. Israel fucking, they murked some people in an official fashion or whatever. Some interesting fallout from this already. Alan Dershowitz has claimed that he may resign as a member of the Democratic Party if they cut aid to Israel. Because that sounds like something that actually, like, even Biden is sort of floating at this point, although he's in this weird situation now where he's like, he made all this sort of happen, so now how does he back down? But I don't know. I think things are going to get interesting from here, because, like, The Hill ran a opinion piece the other day about how we need to, like, replace Biden at the convention. It's pretty interesting, you know? I didn't really think that would make the cut. And then you have, you know, all this deflecting language from the White House, where they're saying, like, you know, Netanyahu gaslit me into doing this and stuff, and I have ADHD. I'm Joe Biden, and I have ADHD, and you're not ready for that. It's time to talk about that, etc. But, like, he is even sort of making non-statements and sort of seeming to realize that it would be, like, maybe political suicide to continue, maybe real suicide to continue aid, like, sending arms to Israel at this point, if this turns into, like, an actual hot war. And then you have, like, John Fetterman, who is, he's now, like, angry at Biden for not being full-throated and sending more arms to Israel. So fucking Fetterman is to the right of Biden in terms of Zionism. Pretty wild stuff. I don't know what to expect in terms of the actual conflict that this could create. I also don't know what to expect in terms of how this plays into American politics. You know, what do you think?
Yeah. Did you see the clip of Trump yesterday, the Trump rally, where people were chanting Genocide Joe? You see this?
No.
It was a really surreal moment. He was giving a speech, had the MAGA hat on, talking about energy policy or whatever, and then throughout the auditorium, I think it was kind of widespread. Different people were chanting Genocide Joe, Genocide Joe, Genocide Joe, and Trump stops for a moment.
Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from? Genocide Joe.
It became a big musical number. We know he's into musicals. He's making this more of a campaign thing because, like, we've seen Trump do his regular shtick. He's branching out now, song and dance. No, but there were – I don't know if it was coordinated or spontaneous or what was behind this. Part of me thinks it was maybe like – activist trying to just stir the pot and like have this, you know, be try to pit Trump against Biden on this issue, or show him that if you want to make things interesting, then take an issue from him that his base agrees with you on. I don't know if that's actually what happened. My guess would be just people have a lot of different information in their minds and have weird ways of sorting it. And so that's just a bad thing about Joe Biden that people have seen on social media. And so they started chanting it.
Right? Yeah. I think that it's just be the thing that you just picked it up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to yell at a Trump rally, 'cause he would also be doing the same genocide, but like, don't assign, you know, consistent logic to these people. He totally could. I could see Trump picking up on that, you know? And
he did at the rally. He was like, he stopped for a moment and you could tell he was trying to figure out what to say, how to respond to it. And then he just comes back to the mic and says, it's true.
It's true. Oh, yeah. He's so funny.
And his point is basically that Biden is responsible for genocide. I guess plausibly he could say, I meant the potential genocide of Israelis by Palestinians that Biden's responsible for. Or he could say, you know, the actual genocide that's happening. And you could have it both ways by just saying, if I was in there, the situation would be much better.
Yeah, and sure. That sounds like some bullshit that both Biden and Trump would do. You know, what's funny about this is that this is how like Dark Brandon became a thing, because it started off with Let's Go Brandon, which was Fuck Joe Biden originally, and then censored as Let's Go Brandon, and then Dark Brandon grew out from there, and then the Biden administration like co-opted Dark Brandon, and they've been doing Dark Brandon jokes at their weird little like Hillary Clinton, Lin-Manuel Miranda fundraising events that no one is paying attention to because it's like the worst thing of all time and no one likes Joe Biden, right? But like, also like the White House Correspondents' Dinner, he did it. He's been, his bit is he puts on his aviator glasses and he goes, Dark Brandon's here.
Uh-huh.
But like, this in theory could follow the same path, and then eventually we have Joe Biden like ironically just playing as Genocide Joe to own the basket of deplorables or whatever. That'd be fucking cool.
Oh, man. Yeah.
They call me Genocide Joe. And then Hillary Clinton's like, oh, shit. You are the living end.
I mean, yeah, I kind of think he wants it to just go away. And it doesn't seem like it will anytime soon. But, yeah, I was talking about this with Andy last night. Or I should say the author A.M. Gitlitz from the Intifada. And we're saying like how, you know, that in both cases, Gaza and Ukraine, there's kind of a sense among probably some people that things have just gotten more chaotic since Joe Biden has become president on the world stage. And, you know, that does memory hole a lot of stuff. Like we were just discussing the attack on Soleimani. And, you know, the world was still a chaotic place when Trump was in there. But you just have, you know, this stuff in the news, and that is powerful. People seeing bad things in the news, and the president is like the person who is directly correlated with the news. And that could have an effect. And Trump, there could have a lane there saying, like, I will make everything kind of calm down, which is weird to have him of all people saying that, but on international issues, I think maybe a cross section of people would buy that.
Yeah, totally. All right. Well, I don't know what to do with this, 'cause like any predictions you make right as of right now are you're just gonna look stupid, you know, when they turn out to be wrong. And it happened yesterday, 24 hours before podcast scheduled time. So we didn't really have time to get, you know, the situation room together to have someone with some pedigree come in here and
I do love my dog food.
School us. Yeah.
Cat dog food, feed it to me. That's what you meant, right?
Yeah, like in Showgirls. Why do they, why is it called that? Like your dog is a fucking learned journalist.
Yeah, well, it's the highest pedigree of food for the dog. It's, you know, it's high quality. Your dog is a high quality dog.
That's cool. I feed Murray from a large bag that has a cat with a pirate hat on to indicate that it's seafood flavored. I think the difference is between how dogs are treated and cats.
What brand is that?
I can't fucking remember. It's called Meow Meow or Frisco's or something.
Well, maybe we could get a plug. We could plug them and get some, at least some free cat food for Murray.
You know, okay, how do I segue into this? There's a lot of shit going on on the TV box and in the moving pictures, as Patton Oswalt said, that you might say is interesting or timely or draws some parallels to all this. One of them being there's a movie called Civil War out by Alex Garland, which I'm sorry, we're going to have to do an episode about. Did I get his name wrong?
No, I keep seeing this. I still don't know what is. Is this a Marvel thing or no?
No. It's an American a creative has decided to game out what the not too distant future could look like.
Oh Jesus! Okay, I have seen some descriptions of this. Yes,
we're gonna have to do a podcast about it. I apologize. It's kind of redundant and it's kind of on the nose, but. It must be done, and it must be done particularly because apparently it's quite bad because it's just a person who has America brain and doesn't understand why things happen, but who has Dunning, what's the Krug Dunning, the
Dunning
phenomenon. That's what it is, Dunning Kruger. When I say Krug Dunning, who thinks that they are the person to tell you the story, right? And so I'm going to pirate it because I don't want to give one red cent to these people, because something that someone noticed in the credits is that there is footage of apparently some sort of Antifa battle that happens in it. And there's found footage donated to the film by one Andy No. The guy who sucks. You all know the guy. Stupid fucking riot fascist journalist guy who says he got hit by a milkshake and now he has the British brain or something. But apparently it's pretty bad. Fallout came out, which if you've never played the Fallout video games, they're excellent. There's a reason the bunch of nerds online like them. Fallout is so they adapted it into a TV show on Amazon, ironically enough. Just this is the world we live in now. Boots Riley's shows are on Amazon, The Boys is on Amazon, you buy the thing criticizing Amazon on Amazon. But I've watched most of it. I'm about to plow through the rest of it. It is extremely good, and it's about a post nuclear apocalypse, so really exciting to watch right now, considering we could be about to get nuked, you know, at least potentially where things are gaming out right now. What's his face? Walton Goggins is one of the main characters. He's excellent. I won't give anything away for anyone who hasn't seen it, but some crazy shit happens to him. I will give this away. There is a character who's part of a sort of like neo-fascist, almost like knighthood type thing. That's also a cop that is it's a really good like science fiction concept for new formations of political and social things that could be happening in a wasteland, right? Or in a post-apocalyptic future. And that character, he has a helmet on while he's talking and his voice is distorted because it's like through a robot thing like this. And I just clicked to pause it while I was watching it. When you do that, there's this thing called X-ray on Amazon Prime that tells you what you're watching. And X-ray informed me that that character was played by Michael Rapaport, right?
So it's Michael, but his voice is like transmogrified. You don't hear the accent at all.
I'm sorry. I'm going to spoil this. if you really just want to go in blind, fucking skip ahead when you watch this. But it's a, like a guy in a like a mech suit. It's so and it's like citizen, like it's fucking, you can't tell it's him. But there's a reveal where his helmet comes off and then you see it's him and he gets killed, which is great. but it's great. Like he gets hit by a snowball or whatever and he fucking dies. It's great like to watch, like it's fun and cathartic to watch that happen. But I don't know. I like it's still a bummer that, you know, this like annoying, very active Zionist propagandist and also a guy with bad politics before October 7th is cast in this. And I just like I tweeted about this and you know, like to the fucking T, a million people responded to me and they were like, yeah, but at least you get to watch him die. You know, I'm like, oh, no, but it's great because he dies. And I just like sort of it was interesting to me because I feel like sometimes I'm the only person that understands that TV shows aren't real in a way. Because, like, if you watch, yeah, he died in it, but it's not like he, like, that's not a cameo. That's a, it's good for his career. It's not like he's like, oh, I got died in the show or whatever. Like, everyone's owning me by watching me die, you know? it's that still sucks. It still struck me as grim, I guess, even though it's weird because he's like he plays the he nails the character because the character is a fucking fascist dumbass like cop guy. But he doesn't care. He doesn't. He knows that that's ironic. Like he Michael Rappaport does all this stuff like he properly trolls critics of Michael Rappaport. And I think that like we shouldn't be this stupid about it because it just works for him. Like he there was a video of him in a hallway at a hotel recently and he's like on the phone and he's saying like I use the word genocide or I don't or I use the word fuck, I can't remember, he's like some you know pro-Israeli buzzword or whatever and you'll pay me how much for that or whatever, and all these people like retweeted it and they're like, look, oh my god, I wonder if this is real. And it's like, fuck, it's not real at all. He's doing that because he knows you will share it and get outraged and it works for him or whatever. Ugh, it's really frustrating. The cultural battlefield. But Fallout's fucking good.
Okay. Fallout. Is Walton Goggins also in that?
Yeah. No, he's okay. In that and as well Civil as... War.
Wow.
No.
Oh, he's okay. Because I keep seeing the picture of him. I assume that was Fallout with his face, with his nose gone. But that's was Fallout. That's not Civil War. Okay.
That's Fallout. He plays what's known as a ghoul in Fallout. It's fucking great. The video. So there's like lore from the video games or whatever. But basically, like there's people that were outside like during the nuclear blast and they're still alive and their skin is just all, they're just burn victims basically. But the, like the game, Fallout games are so good because they, you know, they create storytelling for like what would actually happen if there was a type of person, like a sect of society that was like that. And it's like they're like untouchables, like people don't want to talk to them and they're afraid of them and stuff. And they have, you know, different like needs and shit like that. They're on a part of the caste system. And he's like King Ghoul, basically. He fucking rules. Interesting. But
and you can watch it even if you haven't played the video game?
Yeah, I think it like totally you'll get it. They explain everything, but it's better if you played it. I think that's just me being a nerd. I don't know. There's like a oddly kind of fitting, timely, apocalyptic end of the world TV and movies going on right now. But in the music world, it's the end of the century. Let me tell you, it's 1999 over there. Coachella, the music festival. I don't know if you've heard about this, Anders.
I've heard about this, yeah. A little bit.
It's a big music festival. I guess the headliners this weekend have been like No Doubt, which I don't think they've played together as No Doubt in a long-ass time. They all have like gray hair now and shit. Uh-huh. Gwen Stefani has been Gwen Stefani, right, for years. But No Doubt the band is like from the 90s. And I think Sublime played either right before or right after them, which I'm not actually sure how that went down because the guy from Sublime is dead. So it must be someone else singing.
Well, did they like practice Santeria? And
no, explicitly they don't.
Oh, right. Maybe they broke the... Yeah, I guess once you commit that hard, you can't break it.
Yeah, he broke his mushroom tip. That's how he died. That's from another song on that album. It's real gross. But then, okay, so this is what I was working up towards, though. Then, though, this happened at Coachella. That was Grimes. It is 1999. Her computer is crashing on stage because she downloaded too much illegal music or pornography on Kazaa and LimeWire.
I do have some empathy for her here as a certified moron myself. This is like why I couldn't be a musician. That would be fucking up all the time with whatever instrument it is. It's hard for me enough as it is for me to use a microphone. Or even talking to one. What was that sentence? But I wonder if Elon Musk was behind this somehow, because he must have pals who run Coachella and wanted to sabotage her set.
Yeah, I mean, he's frequently motivated by being cucked by her and bummed out by her being his ex and stuff like that. But I read a juicy tidbit in the tabloids this week that they're flirting again. And I wouldn't be that surprised. I know Grimes, when she left him, she dated cool people and stuff. But I've seen enough of her. She was in a Hideo Kojima documentary I watched recently, and she says the dumbest things of all time every time she appears on screen. So I think she's a dumbass. However, I also think she makes banger music, and I do not think those things are like mutually exclusive at all. Yeah. If you've ever hung out with artists, you know. Yeah. But I also am having a nightmare watching her fuck up on stage like this, because apparently what's happening is that like she said she edited one of her tracks like 30 minutes before going on stage, and I think what she did is something I've done before, which is where you stay up all night working on a thing, and then you accidentally through one keystroke macro edit a lot of parts of it all at the same time and fuck everything up. A couple years ago when I wrote the Master of Margaritas thing, I did that. I stayed up all night editing that shit, and I somehow accidentally deleted like most of it in one keystroke, and I had a meltdown in my apartment. And I figured out how to fix it though, but it was like, I was like just gonna quit the whole podcast. I was so mad. I was like, losing my fucking mind. So I can totally empathize with that. And also I do think it speaks to the fact that she doesn't use a backing track. Like she doesn't have a thing on her computer where she can just play the song, which, you know, not only do I suspect a lot of artists do up there is just go up on a computer and press play. A lot of them, like it's just the norm at this point in this era of music is to use like backing tracks and stuff. There's a couple artists that performed without them this year and got like notable credit for it stuff. So I think like, you know, it's funny because she sucks, but I'm not going to do lib shit with this where I'm like, and it represents that she does not have solidarity or whatever. It's just a fucking thing that happens to artists.
Yeah. It is weird because that really does take the magic out of the big time show like that, and like music and performance is so Tactical difficulties really do fuck with things. It's weird, but you sometimes have to roll with it. Like once the mic cord was stuck in the middle of a stage when I was doing stand up, and I just had to like not move very much. And the next comic just said, "Hey, can you pull this out?" And the host was like, "Yeah, okay." And it took like an extra 2 minutes, and then everything went back to normal. But still, like panic mode sets in, and you're either like it's fight or flight. You're either gonna like freak out and have a meltdown that the thing isn't working, or just like pretend that it's okay.
Yeah, no, it's like there's a reason people have nightmares specifically about that. It's the worst thing that could possibly happen.
Yeah,
the sound went out a bunch of times at Crime Wave too, so I can relate. You know, I was up there like fuck. Just like
it's,
her.
It's just a bit, though. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't have thousands of people who paid hundreds of dollars at all of them, though, in front of me. I had about 100 or something like that.
That's pretty good.
It was pretty good. We packed it out, and then the sound fucked up.
I saw something that the Damon, the guy who's in the Gorillaz, but was also in Blur, was his fans weren't jovial enough, weren't rocking enough at Coachella. And then, You know, it's Coachella, though. So all those people, like you said, are like fans of No Doubt, are in their like 40s and 50s and are not coming to Coachella. You know, it is weird that we don't. I remember people complaining like 20 years ago that like, oh, you millennials need to get your own music. Stop listening to your dad's tunes. And I feel like that's happening now, but maybe it's just like being pushed on young people and they maybe aren't biting as much as we did. But there's always been, when people complain about that, there's always music of that era that they're just not aware of. But it's just weird that there aren't more like contemporary popular acts that are doing these festivals.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, I need to pause real quick. Well, okay. Oh, good.
We were talking pop culture. I haven't seen Dune. Have you seen Dune?
Oh, yeah. It kicked ass. The new one. Dune 2.
That's what I've heard is don't just skip Dune 1 and just see Dune 2.
No. Like, no? You should watch Dune 1. It sets... It's just... These are acts, you know, of a story. Dune 1's slower. Like, it's cool. Less happens. If you just watch it, some people kind of came away with, it's a little bit like nothing happens, right? It's all set up. The payoff is Dune 2. I mean, I guess if you've read the books, maybe you don't need to watch Dune 1. Louisa said that she just watched Dune 2 in the theater. She realized that she hadn't watched the first one, but she's read the books. So, you know, you're good. But I don't know. I'm sorry. That set off a particularly sensitive nerd nerve in my nerve. Being when you said that.
All right. Well, I'll check it out. But I know one person who has seen Dune 1 or Dune 2, and that is maybe both, Chef Jose Andres, who's in the news. He's a hero now. And we actually have a clip of him discussing Dune, a real original take. That's, you know, everybody's scrambling for takes about movies, about Dune in particular. He, I think, has maybe the hottest one. Let's hear it.
Oh, let's hear it. Go to the tape.
Have you seen Dune, Chef? Dune or Dune 2? I would love to eat that warm, man. That warm on the grill. Nobody speaks of, I mean, what the heck? They're missing the opportunity. I didn't see one time any of them in Arrakis just doing a little fillet of the worm. I understand it's like a semi-sacred thing, but that kills people too. Shit, a little steak in a grill? Imagine, this has to taste so good. Like all the animals in Star Wars. Yeah, what's feel I wish we tasted.
We should have done an emergency Dune podcast and then just start off with that. Yeah. Star Wars.
Yeah.
Why does he does raise an interesting question. I'm sure there's an answer to this in the fucking books. I haven't read the one I read in a long time, but what do they eat? They almost never eat on this goddamn story because they're like on a barren desert. And then the one animal that's around, the worm, it's like a god. there's little mouses. That's what the Mobb Deep is a desert mouse. I wonder if they eat them.
I assumed it was just based on the images I've seen of Dune, a type of paste or something.
Cactus, maybe?
Maybe. Maybe it's all pills.
They drink the water of life, which is a blue... It's the lemonade that kills you, basically. It's you drink it, and if you don't die all the way, you're like a god or whatever.
Damn, yeah.
You're a fetayeen or some shit. He's got a good point. I think about this like whenever I watch Pokemon stuff. I'm like, man, what does a Charmander taste like?
Ooh, yeah, a lizard, but probably some meat on that bone. He brings up, he shoehorns in there at the end kind of a disturbing statement that he wants to eat all the animals from Star Wars, which at when I first hear that, I assume he means like Chewbacca and Ewoks and stuff, but I guess there are like less sentient animals he's talking about, like the snow worm or the snow yetis or the axe or whatever.
It's kind of weird. It's kind of a goofy Pluto situation. There are like human animals and animals right. In Star Wars.
Yeah. But it makes sense that he would look at it this way. If people are not familiar, this is a celebrity chef. He is kind of the highest a celebrity chef has risen. He is like basically the head of international bureaucracy, NGO that has been bombed. Israel, this is all over the news. And this is, you know, as we referenced earlier, kind of, unfortunately, this is what it has taken for a lot of leading Democrats to get on the bandwagon for at least conditionalizing aid to Israel, not just giving them tons of money without strings attached, money that's gone to killing American citizens. Not that that should matter, but unfortunately it does. In this case, there were 7 aid workers killed. One was Palestinian. A couple were British intelligence people who were there for, you know, reasons. But this has, like, yeah, set off a firestorm, and it seems like this may be the tipping point for a lot of liberals in the Democratic Party for Israel. My sense is that it's kind of a rotating villain thing, and now Biden is the villain, but he's a pretty pathetic villain because he's not even defending Israel anymore. He's just like kind of
I don't know, man.
Yeah,
yesterday they announced that he was going to speak about what happened yesterday, not the chef thing, but right. The fucking Iran thing, and then they just shortly announced, no, he's not. Yeah. So there's a lot of that. It just seems like they're like, oh fuck, he can't really say anything, can he?
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of political strictures, and there's just cognitive shit going on that may have played a role late on a Saturday night. Who knows? But they're issuing reports. They're leaking to the press that Biden is dangerously close to calling Netanyahu Jack or something. You know, he's really mad. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if anything's
corn pop on him.
Yeah. I don't know if anything's actually going to change. But this has been a flashpoint in press coverage, and it's been a weird kind of thing for me because I'm not a fan of Jose Andres. I think a lot of people on the left are not fans of him, or at a minimum skeptical of him. And now he's condemning Israel. He's saying that his aid workers were targeted, and his rationale is that the convoy all had the World Central Kitchen logo on top of the vehicles, so they knew what they were shooting or bombing.
Well, to be fair, the World Central Kitchen logo looks a lot like a swastika from far away. It's unfortunate, graphic design wise.
I could, if you're colorblind, I could definitely see that, but then you wouldn't, be a pilot. But
the pilots had ADHD, and it's valid.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the more interesting things about the big epic debate, Finkelstein, Benny Morris, Muin Rabbani, and one more person, the chain of command issue as to like who is responsible for making the call about dropping a given bomb. And that was something I guess I hadn't really considered. And Finkelstein, I know, understands it well. But I don't, in this case, it is a little bit hard to unearth or figure out what Israel's angle is here, why they're attacking World Central Kitchen. Because it will get, as we'll get into, they're not a benevolent actor here. I wouldn't say so. What is World Central Kitchen? Who is Jose Andres? Those are things we should address. He is a chef, came to the United States in the early 90s from Spain. And which, by the way, we're allowed to do the accent. At least I'm allowed to do the accent. I guess Jake would have free reign anyway, but he's a Spaniard.
Well, yeah, I was especially allowed to do the accent.
Yeah. He's a Spaniard. He's European. He's white. So he's not,
It's punching up or whatever. It's also, I mean, if you're like of Latin American descent, it's extra punching up.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a very funny accent. Cause like, you know, the part where he's like, the worm, throat noises when you're thinking, you know,
yeah.
I think that's where I get that from, is from, the Spaniard blood was injected into my people.
His gesticulations in that clip are all, you know, you
why can I not eat the Jar Jar? He has low IQ. His ear is so fleshy.
Yeah, he's a philanthropist. He began, though, as a normal chef, ran a kitchen, ran a restaurant in D.C., moved there in 1993, same year Bill Clinton comes into office. And there's a place called D.C. Central Kitchen, which just kind of allocates food for homeless people. And he gets involved there. It's founded by a different guy, and Andres is really captivated by it and wants to scale up that idea. It takes him a long time to do that, but he is very much interested in that and is becoming, really in the 90s and 2000s, kind of a power player around Washington, D.C. and hobnobbing with politicians. And that's part of the reason why the reaction has been so uncharacteristically stark from Nancy Pelosi and people like that, is because they literally know him. Like he's part of the Washington community, and living in DC, he would, you know, I remember walking past a movie theater. He would like have documentaries screening at different places. And he's like a man about town. I never ran into him. We weren't in the same circles, but he's like very much a local celebrity, who like feeds the Washington elite, especially the Democratic Party ones. But he really rose to prominence around the earthquake in Haiti in 2010. And like I said, scaled up. He brought this organization, World Central Kitchen, to Haiti to get people food. And I, you know, this is a very, like, it feels to me like a very early 2010s thing, like Obama era thing, like food justice, which is a good concept in and of itself. But thinking about food in a political way, there was kind of a push around that time to have more organic farming, organic food. Let's move away from factory farms and let's start thinking about food deserts. It's like this policy problem that needs to be solved. And it's, I understand why a lot of people are brought in, why it's appealing, because on the face of it, it's one of the most clear examples of the absurdity of capitalism, is you have just a massive amount of food that's made at a given restaurant or grocery store or whatever, and a lot of it goes bad and it just gets thrown out. And you also have a lot of other people who can't get it, who are eating and they don't have money to buy the food. And instead of giving them the food, most places just throw it away. There are even restaurants that have like a policy, like it's locked up and you cannot give it to people.
Yeah, you can get fired for doing that.
Yeah. I mean, in high school, we used to drive to a Krispy Kreme, and when it was closing up, we would sneak in and take boxes of donuts. And it was a very exciting thing. But
Krispy Kreme donuts are the best dumpster diving food because they box them up and it's fine.
Yeah.
They're totally protected as long as they're like dry or whatever. And it's exactly the product that was just inside the building.
Right. Yeah. They're literally in a box. And I remember one time there was a guy from Krispy Kreme, who worked for Krispy Kreme, who had a truck and was like loading them into his truck. And we're like, oh fuck, what do we do? And my friend snuck in and nabbed one. It was like this exciting. It was like the highlight of that year for me.
There was this really good barbecue place called Bill Miller Barbecue in San Antonio when I lived there. And I had a friend who worked there, and he told me one time, he was like, come by Friday night when they're closing, go through the drive-thru and say it like this, like say a specific combination of words, basically. And I did. I went through the drive-thru and I was like, so, you know, I heard you're getting rid of some stuff, you know, it's time to close some stuff out. And there was like a kind of a pause. And then like the drive-thru guy went like, yeah, you hit the jackpot. And he like we pulled. He's like, pull around. I got you. And then because that's the night that they have to throw in all the stuff. So he just threw like all these pies and stuff at us, like Ooh, shit like that, dang, that they have to throw out. But it's technically still good, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it fucking ruled.
Man, what was the sequence of words?
I mean, I can't remember, but it was like, you know, like say it like this kind of thing. Hey, are you throwing anything out? You know, I'm not a cop. Wink, wink. I'm not. This isn't a pie sting, man.
Hmm. Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, and this is like people see this and it's like this informal part of the economy is like food waste. And what do you do with it? And a lot of companies are very punitive and insistent that we can't, you know, give it to people because that would just defeat the entire purpose of being a company, is if we're giving out our product for free. And, you know, this is why people like Jose Andres are interested in helping people. And I do think there's a genuine sort of heart in him, and that he sees all these people in dire situations and wants to help. But the answer is, you know, an economy, a world where things are produced and allocated based on use value instead of exchange value, which is what it is under capitalism. And that's really the core of the problem. But to Jose Andres, he is, and I have kind of a theory here. I listened to his Mark Maron interview, and he was talking about there needs to be like a Department of Food, like the Department of Agriculture isn't enough. We need somebody to like think about and organize martial government resources around food, combating.
Why is there not, cannot be a president of making little treats?
That's what he wants to be. I swear to God, I think this is really what he has been angling for. He wants to be the Secretary of Food. That is his goal, and that's why he's in Washington. That's why he's like. That's what his career has been building towards. Is he wants to be a cabinet secretary and in charge of this stuff. And it is, you know, again, it's like, yeah, there should be someone thinking about the logistics of how people are eating and how we're going to get food to people on the national level, but it should be, you know, through a different system because it's designed to keep people hungry or adjacent to hungry. But yeah, Haiti in 2010 was really a big flashpoint for him. The World Central Kitchen sort of begins, and it's going to different disaster areas throughout the world. And meanwhile, though, he has restaurants in New York and DC, and was really opposed in DC to raising the minimum wage for tipped workers. There was an initiative in 2018. That passed. It was a ballot referendum. The voters of DC voted to give servers, waitstaff, bartenders a minimum wage because, you know, for most of our listeners probably know this, but there's like a tipped minimum wage in a lot of places where you technically just get paid like $4 an hour sometimes. And then if you're a tipped worker, you supposedly, you know, you're supposed to make up for that with all the tips you get. And sometimes it's fine, but then if it's not busy, you're SOL.
And it's a needlessly complex system, and it comes from slavery. I bring this up as often as possible. I'm sure I've mentioned this on the show before, but like the reason that you always have to explain this to Europeans when you're working in the service industry, or I mean, you're not supposed to, but I do, is it isn't like this most other places. It's specifically like this in the United States because the reason tipping like took off so hard and there's such a legacy of it here is because after slavery, people in the South that owned property and owned shit like, you know, restaurants and hotels and stuff like that, you know, they're trying to reconstruct their, you know, little mode of production as close to slavery as possible without technically being slavery. And like the rapid shift towards paying people a wage, it would be a economic jolt. It would render some of them like in that position, you know, unviable or whatever, and they're all in competition. So what tipping is from that point of view originally is, okay, I have this person, they're no longer a slave, they're a worker, but they have to be paid, but I'm in no position to pay them. You outsource their wages to the customer. That's in essence what tipping is. And like I think about this a lot because like you see this kind of thing from just dumb people on the internet. I'm friends with a lot of stupid stand-up comics on Facebook and stuff. And there's a meme going around of like when the person flips the iPad around and they're asking for a tip, and it's supposed to be antagonizing of the cashier at fucking Subway or whatever. Like, oh, like this person wants a tip also or whatever. But that's not that person like asking you to tip them. That's their boss asking you to pay them instead of them paying them, you know, the worker doesn't do it. So that's why there's a movement to abolish tips. I'm a fucking person who's lived on tips almost exclusively, and I'm against tips. Like it should be replaced with a wage like they have in Europe.
Right. But it needs to be done like this through measures like a universal, you know, wage increase and not just
it has to be a law. You can't you can't be the first person to just do that yourself. I mean there are like co-ops and stuff like that where people just get paid instead, but it needs to be regulated because the entire system of keeping this intact is competition.
But the story in DC, like it passed as an initiative, then it went to the city council and lobbies that were funded by people like Jose Andres lobbied the council very hard to not do it and basically go against the will of the voters. This is 2018, 2019. Then in more recently, 2022, they passed it again. They did another initiative, and this time the city council has changed a bit. So I actually should check in on how that's doing. But needless to say, Jose Andres is against it for selfish reasons. Like he claims that this is going to, you know, cause his restaurants to have to cut costs in other ways, even though it's been studied. And there's not actually a lot of evidence that the average restaurant has to do that. You know, he's like warning you're going to have to increase prices. There's data. This is from even the Center for American Progress, so people who are like friends with Jose Andres probably, they say that workers in states without a lower tip minimum wage generally make out as well or better than workers who receive a sub-minimum tipped wage, and that like that just it hasn't happened in cities where they warn it will. Interestingly, though, in 2020, Jose Andres actually encouraged Cuomo, who was still governor of New York at that point, to get rid of the tip minimum wage and increase tip workers' wage in New York State. There was some, I think the real reason for that, though, is, I mean, number one, the pandemic was in full flight, so it was a lot harder to argue that you shouldn't give servers like a living wage when, you know, there's a lot less customers all of a sudden. But also there was, it included a payroll tax cut for restaurants. So it seems like he's kind of having it both ways, but different situation in 2020, and also he benefited from that bill. There's an article by John Beshe in Jacobin from a few years ago that explains more of this stuff. But even more recently, his company, his organization, has been under, you know, under the black light, if you will, for some nasty stuff. They didn't have a human relations person until 2020, World Central Kitchen. And
we like to do things a little European over here. I'm losing my accent, but you know,
that's what happened. Yes,
you know how they are.
They are, yeah. And if you watch, you know, footage of Jose Andres, he like touches people and hugs people, and like there's a scene in the documentary where he like yells at someone who works for him, and he whacks him on the head almost, but it's like a weird Spanish thing where it's like not a full like. Hit. It's just almost playful, but he's genuinely mad. So
it's referred to as the Spanish whack. Of course, we all know it.
Spanish whack, yeah. And this is in the Bahamas when there was a hurricane there, and there's a woman who witnesses it, and she's like, "What the fuck? You can't do that." And Jose comes over to her, is like, "I apologize. I apologize to you." And she's like, "Don't apologize to me. Apologize to him." And like he's trying to make up for it and explain like how it's coming from the right place. And even the guy who he like freaks out at is like, no, it's cool. It's fine.
That's weird. I wonder like if that's just, you know, if you're from somewhere and no one else is from there, you could just be like, oh, this is a Texas thing that I do is that I'm frequently late, you know?
Yeah, Texas time.
Yeah, he could be like, oh, in Spain, we hit each other in the head all the time. And it's like, no, you just hit a guy.
Yeah. Well, one of his employees, Mr. Chef Kilcoyne, was the guy's name.
Incredible.
He harassed and flirted with someone who worked at World Central Kitchen. She asked him to stop, and then he cut off communications with her. And then another woman who contracted with World Central Kitchen said that this guy Kilcoyne told her about his sex life within minutes of them meeting, and then pressured her into having meals with him, sent texts to her late at night. Another person.
Maybe this is why the Israelis targeted them, huh? You ever think about that?
Yeah, they're doing feminism, maybe. Yeah.
That's right. They're girl bossing or whatever.
And then, yeah, he would just like aggressively hit on women, and most of them, and this is Bloomberg did an article about this, most of those women, they no longer are with World Central Kitchen. So it's,
well, I mean, aren't they better off? You know, might have saved their lives. They dodged a bullet.
That's true. Yeah. Maybe they saw something coming, but, yeah, it's not a good stew when people leave and they're the victim of that and the perpetrator stays, but finally they let him go. Before this whole thing hit the fan, he's having a sexual harassment scandal and the guy has to leave. And then just a few weeks after, the dude who basically covered for the other guy, Jose Andres, tweets out a picture of the two of them. Says, "I cannot wait to see what you will do next. Gracias, amigo." Yeah, it's a weird situation. Kilcoyne was the perpetrator, and then I guess Mook was kind of like covered for him and didn't adequately report him. There's also kind of a scandal with ICE and DHS in 2018 with the hurricane in Puerto Rico. This is the excuse that World Central Kitchen gives, that FEMA, who they contract with, by the way, I should add that. So they get a lot of money from private donations, but they also get like contracts and grants from the government, FEMA, you know, other agencies to do this work. And they make a lot of money. In 2022, they made $400 million, And that was an increase over 2021, where they made $123 million. The reason for that is the war in Ukraine, which was kind of their first, like, entree, if you will, into a war. They're feeding the Ukrainian people during a war, but there is some weird stuff there with potentially fraud. They admitted this, is that they had to hire a lawyer because in war zones, this is how they explain it. Again, a lot of nonprofits operating in major crises and active war zones are likely to experience fraud, is what they say, as we recently saw reports in Ethiopia. But we're committed to learning from experiences and taking additional steps to improve operations, yada, yada. But an independent law firm they hired said there's several million dollars worth of fraud, not only in the Ukraine, but also in Turkey. And, you know, if you know anything about the Ukraine war, a lot of money and weapons just being funneled in there. And we don't really know where it's going in a lot of cases. They're saying that they've implemented safeguards and all that stuff, but it's a moneymaker. But on the Puerto Rico thing, so FEMA is doing disaster relief there, and they have ICE agents in Puerto Rico helping with this stuff because they're like tied to FEMA for some reason, and they like take a photo or of like the ICE people helping and delivering meals. So that's obviously not a great look for a company that's in a figurehead, Jose Andres, who's like very pro immigrant. He himself is an immigrant, and so he likes to champion that, but it led to La Morada, which is a restaurant in the Bronx that's actually owned and operated by undocumented immigrants. They cut ties with World Central Kitchen because they thought this was inexcusable, that you can't work with ICE during, not any time, but especially during the Trump administration.
Yeah, that's crazy. What if they did a thing where ICE like drags someone's grandmother out of their home and they're like, come with us. And then the camera's following them and it's all shaky, but then it's like, for breakfast. And then it's Jose Andres has made you like, you know, fritters and omelets and stuff. He has an omelet bar set up. It's actually heartwarming that they did that.
I mean, he should do that, right? Like, why not feed people at the border? It would be nice. I mean, I guess probably a lot of them don't want the attention, but and they're also in these camps and stuff. They don't want good meals getting in, so that's unfortunate. I was imagining today, like, what if I was in one of these war zones and like I'm lactose intolerant and like all I get is like all they have is like cream of wheat and I'm
all he's making is creme fraiche and like a mousse bouche of various types that are all so dairy heavy. Yeah. They give you diarrhea.
So, I mean, he's also, you know, there have been mutual aid organizations that have refused to work with him because he, like, well, they'll post photos of cops who they're helping out, especially during, like, COVID when they're doing that. But what, you know, they are responsible for a lot of, you know, disaster relief, but also, like, domestically, food deserts, they try to help out restaurants in those areas and get people food. And this was a big thing during COVID. They did help a lot of like small businesses, struggling restaurants. They, you know, gave them basically subsidies and helped them prepare meals and get them out to people. You know, I don't think that's they're Halliburton for that. You know, someone had to do it. And it's a shame that we don't have more of an infrastructure for that, for food justice, just in the world, and that it kind of comes back to a nonprofit industrial complex situation. But that's where the world was in 2020, and to a large extent still is.
This is all well within the lib zone.
Yeah.
You know, it's like It's complicated. Some of the stuff is legitimately serving ends and serving purposes and stuff. You know, it's just that what you're describing is a bunch of people that can't imagine this stuff working any way better than this.
Right.
You can't imagine things existing for their use value or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. But even within like the world we have now, and this comes back to what's in the news with World Central Kitchen. Even within the world we have now, there was a better way, which is UNRWA in Gaza, the UN relief agency, which was getting people food. And as Electronic Intifada reports, what World Central Kitchen ended up doing when they took over in Gaza after UNRWA was defunded, what the food they were giving out is a pittance compared to UNRWA. And that's a difference between a private charity, a nonprofit organization, an NGO, and an actual like state-funded relief agency, an arm. Like that's what governments are for. And I know the UN is not a government. The right-wingers would call it one world government, but it's governments kind of coming together in a collective way and actually addressing these problems. But I think the key thing is, the main reason is funding, because the UN had more funding and a lot of that was coming directly from the US, you know, much to the chagrin of a lot of American policymakers. But I think another reason too was the way that UNRWA operates is they get locals. They recruit and use people who live in these areas to distribute the food. And that's how you have to do it for it to work. And I don't have a great sense of the day-to-day functions of this stuff. But my sense is that with World Central Kitchen, it's not quite the same. Like, these people know what they're doing and they've been doing it for a while, but it is people coming in with the cargo vests, you know, and setting up tables and giving people food. It's not like the locals being in charge of it, right? Someone coming down from on high. And ultimately that has proven, just from what I've read about it, to be less efficient. The amount of meals that they were giving just does not begin to compare with UNRWA. And, people remember the funding was cut after it came out that perhaps, I don't think they even proved this, but perhaps certain people who are working for UNRWA in Gaza were in on the October 7th attacks.
I remember hearing this.
Yeah.
Or at least proposed. Yeah.
Right. But after that happened, our government was like, well, we got to cut that off until we investigate. We'll do that investigation, which seems to have gone a lot like all the other investigations, that into Israel, what Israel has done. This one has just been delayed into perpetuity. And I don't know if we're ever going
to
find out.
It's like a really important thing to cut off in perpetuity like that too.
Yeah. Right. And it's, you know, also important, like it doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter if people have done that. Like that's beside the point. There's a lot of people in this area and they all need to eat. And if the way to get them food is you have people who have maybe done bad stuff in another context, you have to get them the food, like that's the price you have to pay. It's a really disturbing situation, especially because up until earlier this month, World Central Kitchen was kind of used to paper over that fact, because that became the PR thing, right? This Jose Andres, that's his thing. He goes into war zones, disaster areas. And again, war zones are kind of a new, he's reached like a new echelon. Before it was just like hurricanes.
Yeah.
Now he's doing like combat.
That's so dark because it's just like a career credit.
Yeah.
You've seen him on Mark Maron's WTF. Now he's feeding a war. It's huge for him, you know? Start off with a small tornado or something.
Uh-huh.
Now he's going to the biggest disaster he could find.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and yeah, that's how they're spinning it, right? There's like this, look at this guy who's doing this humanitarian stuff, isn't that great? And that's being used to basically cover the fact that UNRWA, their funding has been cut, and that what World Central Kitchen is delivering and is able to deliver is insufficient. Electronic Intifada writes that they've bragged, World Central Kitchen has bragged about serving 42 million meals. They have 68 community kitchens. This is in March in Gaza, which sounds impressive, but there's 2.3 million people in Gaza. If each of them needs three meals a day, that means the overall population needs almost 7 million meals per day, or 49 million meals per week. So it's just not enough meals by at least 7 million.
He needs to link up with, what's his face? Talcum X. Who the guy? His name's escaped. Yeah, because he's got meals for Ramadan.
Yeah.
Do you think he went out there to try to find the worm? Because he, you know,
this is a desertist.
There is kind of a eerie similarity hanging in the air with that movie being out and things happening in the Middle East.
I guess so. I haven't seen the movie, but maybe he's searching for something. But he, back in like the fall, he was very quick to defend Israel, Jose Andres was, and say that, oh yeah, they have a right to defend themselves. And he even called on the Spanish government minister, one of them, Ione Belera, who denounced the slaughter as a genocide. And he said that she had to be, kicked off her post in the Spanish government for being, you know, too critical of Israel. So he's really done a 180 and has said that that Israel should, you know, they deliberately targeted his workers and are now at this point, in his words, and I thought this was actually quite eloquent, they are now, it's not a war against terrorism, it's a war against humanity. They're reached a new phase. And you know, that's, I'm sure he's genuine in that, but there are some questions I think being raised about, did he not see this coming? Was it reckless? Is it irresponsible to put those aid workers in danger? Why wasn't he there? You know? And also there's this whole specter of the dock that's supposedly being built in Gaza, this relief dock that State of the Union speech Biden gave that everyone's like raving about for some reason, that you know, they were collecting intel, and Biden is using Jose Andres and World Central Kitchen to like get intel for them to set up this dock thing, which
that shit's gonna get blown up immediately.
Yeah,
there's no way.
Well, it's
Hamas is hiding inside the dock.
That's what would happen. Yeah. I mean, it's doubt. It doesn't seem like it's going to be built. There's a story in Middle East Eye that says this is the headline is U.S. weakness on steroids. Biden's, which is an interesting way to phrase it. That's kind of contradictory, but leaving that aside, the port plan is less than impressive. It's will take weeks to implement, and that's by the time it's built, then a lot of people, frankly, are going to be dead. And you know, if it does get built,
yeah, left less mouths to feed. Think, always look on the bright side.
That's
Anders.
How they're thinking about it. I guess
it's fucked up.
Yeah.
I've been in Los Angeles for a while. Let me pitch this at you. What if we drop Ozempic over there? It makes you not even feel hungry.
I'm sure they've considered that as well. yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a sad situation. And with the dock, it does raise questions as well about what kind of society are they trying to build for when the war is over? And is this kind of a part of that? Because it, you know, I've heard some speculation that it could just be like some people want it to be like a Saudi satellite state, Gaza. And maybe this is a pathway to that. But first, you have to kill all the people, which is seems like that's what's happening now. You know, the optics of World Central Kitchen are so bad that I do actually kind of wonder how intentional it was or what point in the chain of command allowed it to happen. I wonder if how high up it goes. I don't know if Netanyahu is in charge of those decisions, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was. But it's kind of vexing that they would choose to bomb these people after they've gotten what they wanted, Israel has, in removing UNRWA, because they don't like the UN, the US they can deal with, and World Central Kitchen is essentially an arm of the US, the State Department, and they don't want to deal with that either. I think at the end of the day, what they want to do is make sure food is not getting into Gaza, and the charitable read on that is, well, they're just trying to starve out the Hamas members, and unfortunately, you also have to kill everybody else through starving. But I think it's even worse than that, possibly, in that they genuinely just want to starve everybody and kill as many Palestinians as they can to make sure there's as little possibility for sovereignty after the war ends or the conflict ends. It's hard to even call it a war. There's as few people as possible to deal with.
It's a genocide, Anders. Don't you remember what we screamed at AOC weeks ago?
Yes. I mean, that's what it is.
It's bad. I think it's bad to call it a war because that's like,
right.
That's language, you know, that's Chomsky shit.
Yeah.
Calling it a war makes people think of it as a two-sided thing. That's why they say it like that in media.
Well, but now after yesterday, it could become a war.
that's true. It could become an actual war. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh, I don't know, man. I mean, I think like this is an interesting story because hold on, I'll be right back.
The war.
I gotta remember. I don't know. This is like an interesting situation because to answer two questions you just raised, I guess in my opinion, you know, one thing that's happening is like if you're some individual liberal like celebrity actor or whatever in the middle of this he probably wanted to believe that the system functions the way that we kind of tend to believe it does or that liberals tend to believe it does and that Israel, you know, couldn't possibly be the bad actor in the situation right up until this is happening. Like there's a breaking point for stuff and it is kind of crazy to see Israel push shit like this to the breaking point. But Israel does push like this to the breaking point because the history of the United States, you know, sort of like protection of its sponsorship of Israel is just like one of almost zero resistance. Like, you know, we've been talking about this book I've been going through on these little side episodes. And I mean, way, way back, there's like a few incidences where Israel realized that there's like boundaries to having state sponsorship from someone like the United States in that when they invaded Beirut and, you know, killed some Americans in like a embassy, there's an embassy there they killed some Americans at, you know, that sort of hit a wall in terms of how far you can go. And then also like way back with the Suez crisis and stuff, just like flat out invading other states and stuff. It's a thing that they tend to not actually do other than the, you know, the Palestine, not state thing I talked about earlier or whatever. But there's these moments where they're just like, they'll just go into fucking whoever's office and just say, we are going to do this and pretty much get nothing but like, you know, whoever was president at the time's aides going like, wow, can you believe they fucking said that? But then they still go through with it. There's been, you know, very little resistance that led up to this. So I think this is just like, I don't know. We're in a moment right now, especially post this and probably other things that are going to happen where it's no longer tenable. The facade that this is a narrative story where Israel's the victim or whatever. I don't know. I think my prediction here, I guess, actually is that it's going to become impossible for even the American status quo and corporate media to spin this the way they have been. And it's going to get cleverly repackaged into, you know, and just in ways like how Biden is starting to say, oh, this was all Netanyahu's idea. You know, I had nothing to do with it or whatever. Or like, oh, we didn't know either until it got this bad. It's kind of a way that people back out of situations like this or arguments like this. I think it's cracking wide open, but there are ways to spin this.
Yeah, and they're increasingly running out of room, but you know that there's one thing Biden can do to have credibility, and that's actually conditioned aid. And he has never been willing to do that. So if I don't know what it would take, but I think in all likelihood, you know, it'll end sooner or later and probably end really badly. I think they're just going to try to maximize the kill count and then set up a Bantu stun.
Yeah, I mean, you know, potentially this turns into a hot war. On some level, I think you could argue, I mean, you always could argue this and it wouldn't matter. You could say, you know, like all the things that people said about when Trump killed Soleimani, like this is wildly irresponsible and stuff and you're going to get us all killed. But at some point, there is like a tipping point where even liberals will be like, the argument is kind of, it kind of works if you say, this guy is threatening our lives at this point, you know? Uh-huh. This could potentially engage the United States of America in a military conflict. That's right. Fucking bad, right?
I mean, and Israel, you may know this better than me from the 100-year war on Palestine, but Israel, they've taken it from different sides before, right? They've fought a hot war like with multiple encroaching armies.
I think that's accurate.
Okay. That could happen again. I don't know. Like now with Iran, they're going to hit back Iran. I mean, I know there's some deciding to do over how hard to go, especially, you know, at this point, when they have their hands full, but they're going to hit back. And then, yeah, it's a stone's throw from Iran to Israel. You know, and that's, I think about this sometimes because the argument that, you know, we need to be concerned over Israel's nukes, I've heard is kind of like a red herring, because if they actually use that nuke, the Middle East, on Iran anyway, the Middle East is small enough that it would destroy Israel's ecosystem. But at this point, maybe they're crazy enough to do something like that. Well, have to see. I hope they don't, but maybe it'll actually be like a land war. Maybe there will be troops from other countries that invade Israel. And, you know, in years past, that would be unthinkable, but now they've alienated so much of the world that maybe they wouldn't get any help. I mean, I don't think they're going to get invaded by Egypt, but Lebanon is looking pretty gnarly. And then Iran too. That's two countries, like something could happen. I don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. This is probably kind of far-fetched, but like the reason the World War III alarm bell is going off, I think, is because you have in Iran pretty easy to imagine villain cast in the American eye. You know, we can have another early 2000s level of Islamophobia and xenophobia. It's easy to stir up. It's a classic, happens here all the time, you know. And the connection perceived or real between Iran and and Russia historically, right? Like if I was writing a bad movie like called Civil War or something like that, maybe I would imagine that that gets the Russia involved or whatever, and then boom, you know, big superpowers going at it again or whatever the fuck. Not really superpowers still, but that might be enough to sell America getting involved in some sort of proxy way. I don't know. I don't know. I was just thinking about the jingoism and stuff, because I don't know if you saw, but Brianna Wu, who's just one of the idiots on Twitter that's overly popular, did something very funny, but also like foreboding today or yesterday or whatever, which is like try to do a tweet thread educating people about Iran. And, you know, she's dumb and doesn't understand what the fuck she's talking about. So she's painting Iran as this evil theocracy and just leaving out the U.S. involvement and the reason that there's a.
Right. She started like after 1953, right? Like significantly, isn't it? I think from what I saw.
Yeah, it's either deliberately or she just Googled, like, it's probably, I think my confirmation bias sort of Googling is what I would imagine happened. Like, how do I make, you know, this answer the question I'm trying to answer or whatever? But it leaves out the thing that we did our actual Iran podcast on, which is the fucking overthrow of the, you know, the guy who was going to nationalize stuff there and was a soft, you know, sort of socialist, you know, what was it, Mossadegh who got fucking murked by the CIA and created a situation for all these right wing powers to come in and take over as puppets of the United States. People are that's going to be left out of the fucking story when we have a million stories on why Iran is suddenly so evil and we have to go protect our ally Israel from them and stuff.
Yeah.
They're not going to talk about Kermit Roosevelt at all.
Yeah, that's the guy who did the coup was named Kermit.
Last guy to be named that. Damned frog. The man fucks pigs. Damn.
All right. Well, did we turn out some hot takes for this brewing situation?
Yeah, it's some hot poop. I mean, it's fucking hard to do a podcast about something like this early in because things change so quickly. And then a week later, you're like, oh, that thing I said makes no fucking sense anymore. Right. But I don't know. I think those are some viable takes. Those are some certified takes, you know. And we tested the cultural water, too.
Yeah. War bad, comma, genocide bad. That's my take.
Grimes, weird.
Jose Andres, mostly still bad.
Civil War, gonna be bad. Definitely looks stupid. It's like there's an alliance between Texas and California for some reason. It's nonsense.
That's not, I don't see that being a thing.
Fallout good.
All right, Fallout good. Dune? Question mark. I'll watch.
Well, question mark to you. Everyone else in the world watched it last month.
Shogun good. If you haven't seen Shogun, that one's a good
one. Oh, yeah. Shogun fucking rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Listen to my other podcast, Why You Mad. Listen to my other podcast. That's my podcast, I Don't Know You. It's about King of the Hill. It's very funny. We read King of the Hill fan fiction on the Patreon. It's insane. I'm going on tour. I'm going on a little tour. It's hard to call it a tour. It's like three dates. But fuck it, man. That's where I'm at right now. I'm doing a show at the Good Night here in Los Angeles. Probably going to dress up as either Cheech or Chong and do something real weird. I'm performing in Bisbee, Arizona for some crazy ass reason. Somebody booked me out there. And I'm also performing in Albuquerque at Dry Heat Comedy Club and maybe Las Vegas. I'm really trying to talk myself out of it. Somebody offered me some money, but I hate doing comedy in Las Vegas. But maybe I will.
Nice. At Anders Lee here on Twitter. Listen to my other podcast, The Vanquished, about failed presidential candidates. Got a good one we just dropped about Ross Perot. And if you're in New York, come out to Ian Huntley campaign headquarters in Bed-Stuy. He is running an insurgent campaign against a corrupt incumbent who's been bought off by real estate. She's actually my assembly member. So we're trying to unseat her with a socialist candidate, working class, son of Brooklyn. We are doing a stand-up fundraiser for Ian this coming Friday, the 19th, at his campaign headquarters, 320 Tompkins Ave, doors at 7, show at 8 o'clock. And I'll put the ActBlue link in the description.
Cool. Love it. All right.
It's World War III. It's nuked. I don't know. It's a drone.
Drone.
Drone. Drone. Drone. Drone.